carry 4 counts of child molestation. Could receive a maximum sentence of 20 years in confinement.
Welcome back to another episode of Seven Deadly Sinners. Thank you so much for listening, and if you're enjoying the show, tell a friend. Tag us when you're listening on Instagram, and as always, leaving a positive review and 5 stars not only helps me get through writing these episodes, sometimes into the wee hours of the night in a hotel after going to see a prison. What? Is that a teaser? Yes, it is. It's a teaser for what's to come in this episode. But really, the reviews help my soul and the podcast so much, and the podcast would be nothing without you. So thank you. And now, for one of the most head-spinning, bizarre, relatively unknown cult stories I've ever researched or heard of. This man is an absolute narcissistic monster, who rivals Tony and Susan Alamo in many areas of this case, including how they treat their cult followers, the off-the-grid compounds, the money they get from their followers working or peddling for free, a random attempt at a music career. But to be fair, a handful of cult leaders have attempted and failed at music stardom. Just seems to come with the territory. Now, I truly believe fame and adoration is these cult leaders' goal, no matter how they have to get it. So they start trying to make it in the music industry, and some, including our case today, have actually cut records, but never achieved that Elvis Presley type obsession and worship from fans, where women are literally fainting and begging to sleep with you. Because here's the thing, a music career is largely in the hands of other people, record labels, music executives, fan appeal, etc. And making it is a 1 in a million shot. So if you're not talented enough or sexy enough or just didn't get lucky, it ain't happening. But that doesn't mean these cult leaders weren't still lusting to be worshipped. And for someone like our case today, that lust for praise, for people to be infatuated with him to the point where they will do anything just to be near him, was unquenchable before he even set out on the path of being a cult leader. And once he was, the lust for people to be addicted to him, frenzied to hear his words and willing to do whatever he told them, was never going to be quenched. But before I do my big reveal on who today's cult leader is, let's quickly revisit the twin of this week's cult leader, Tony Alamo, and just have a moment of silence for one of the creepiest voices and the most cringeworthy, I want to hide under a table right now lyrics that, well, really didn't relate to the target demo. Think like a busy housewife, for example, looking for an escape. Because if you'll remember from the Tony and Susan Alamo series we did, and if you haven't listened, go back and listen, because it's not only insane, but you'll see many parallels between them and the case today. But yeah, I can imagine a housewife at home, you know, hearing this song and being like, okay, yeah, washing dishes. Well, it starts out kind of pleasant, folky. Okay, I can do my chores to this. And then he hits it.
Little Yankee girl, over there, little Yankee girl.
Okay.
Would you care if I should kiss you?
Oh, God.
Tonight.
I think I need to call the cops.
Little Yankee girl, you're soft as a dove.
Oh, no.
Yankee girls were made to love.
No, they weren't. No.
So, little Yankee girl, won't you love me tonight?
She will not. Okay, Tony, this is getting a little out of hand. You're coming off creepy. You're scaring people. And if anyone thought that when they heard that song, they were right. Because he ended up being sentenced to over 100 years in prison for child sexual crimes. And our case today will prove to be as creepy, if not more, with his deplorable sexual crimes that, similarly, when you go back and listen to his songs, oh, they read a whole lot different when you know what we know now. Here's just a tiny little musical snack from the man we are covering today.
Been looking for a lover forever, for a long, long time.
taking over.
Admittedly, he's not half bad, but he's still a scumbag. A scumbag that tops the list on pomp and circumstance, an ADD level changing of ideologies and beliefs, let alone names. This man changed his name with the freaking wind to fit into whatever he was peddling that day. And I'm going to say it right now. I don't think he was crazy. I don't even think he had any religion in his heart. I think he found a way to begin his cult in the right place at the right time. And when his power and control grew, he just got more and more creative with his bullshit. Because he could. His lust was his driving force. He was the typical charismatic cult leader who brainwashed his loyal followers into not even questioning something as bizarre as the transition from following a Muslim ideology to believing their leader was a celestial alien being. Just no questions, just all right, sounds good, Dwight. And I'll stop teasing who this absolute joke of a human is now and jump in. And guys, this is probably going to be three parts, especially if Tony and Susan Alamo were four, because I simply cannot sum up a cult leader who masqueraded as a god of sorts, like I said, an alien, an R&B disco singer, a Native American god, chief, who knows, and eventually an Egyptian pharaoh. Yeah, you heard me right. This is the insane story of Dwight York. Ultimate scumbag who conned and destroyed, violated his followers in almost every way possible, sexually, mentally, physically, emotionally, you name it. And sadly, no one was safe. From adult men and women to little girls and boys, everyone was taken advantage of in some way. And now the sin I'm ascribing to Dwight York is lust, but not because of his sexual crimes. Lust should never be attributed to a man who preyed on children. His lust was for ultimate control. And not to give away how this story ends up, for Dwight at least, trust me, that ending will be satisfying. But for the people who landed in his orbit, my heart is with you, and I hope you are fucking thriving. I hope that is your ending, that you are thriving. I've exchanged a few emails with a former member, though she was a small child when she was brought in. Her name is Jamila, and she is a brilliant writer, journalist, and like I said, she was a child in the initial version of Dwight's cult stationed in Brooklyn. And she is so graceful and cool, and I hope you read her book. It's called The Community. The writing is breathtaking and makes you feel like you can smell what it's like to be there. And when we get to that point, I will draw on her descriptions of being in those moments in time, as they are poignant.
But York, are you now under the influence of any alcohol, drugs, or narcotics? You understand you are charged with 40 counts of aggravated child molestation, that you could receive a maximum sentence of 30 years in confinement for each count, that you are charged with 34 counts of child molestation, could receive a maximum sentence of 20 years in.
Without the possibility of parole, it is a sentence from which there is no escape and no return.
Guzman made billions pouring poison over our southern border.
How do you plead, guilty or not guilty?
Now imagine this. 23 hours a day, you're in a 7 by 12 foot concrete, sterile jail cell, with a window so small, you can't even see the Rocky Mountains, the only beauty this prison has in sight. But the prisoners can't see it. The only human interaction in those 23 hours is a guard sliding your meal through a small hole in the door. The majority of them are serving life sentences in hauntingly locked down cells that are surrounded by gun towers, armed guards. And the most eerie aspect is the worst of the worst criminals are in cells underground under meters of Colorado dirt. If you wind up in the Alcatraz of the Rockies, you, my friend, are most likely not getting out alive. Though I will say that a few notable inmates, a former high-ranking CIA agent who sold classified information to Russia, is set to be released in 2023. And an American pharmacist in cahoots with Al-Qaeda is set to be released in 2024. Single ladies, you better hope you don't unknowingly swipe right on these guys on a dating app, because there's no way, in addition to being like risk-taking criminals, there's no way you get through 2 decades in 23-hour solitary confinement a day without being something barely recognizable as a well-adjusted human. ADX Florence, located in a tiny town in Colorado, was specifically designed to be cut off from the world and to keep its inmates in solitary confinement. The Supermax houses prisoners seemed far too dangerous to take the chance of incarcerating them in the average prison, even the average maximum security prison. Supermax is in a league of its own. And Dwight York, who signed on in one of his books, but let's not kid ourselves, Dwight, they are basically stapled together pieces of paper that now show up as PDFs that are extremely hard to find online. Anyway, the man who signed on to one of his books announcing himself as, and I have to take a big deep breath here, quote, "I am the grand potentate, noble, reverend, Dr. Malachi Z. York, EL 33 degrees / 720 degrees. It says like the little like degree sign. Okay. I am the grand potentate, noble reverend, Dr. Malachi Z. York, EL 33 degrees / 720 degrees. I don't know if these are coordinates, sir. I don't know. Reverend of the Egyptian Church, Egyptian spelled EGIPTIAN, of Christ, Inc. Are you incorporated? I'm so lost. The Imperial Grand Potentate, you already said that, Dwight, of the International Supreme Grand Council of Arab Shrinedom, not a word, of the Desert Al-Mahdi Shrine Temple, number 19, Desert Georgia, Oasis, Macon.
Okay, I stopped recording because I thought it was over.
And then he says, quote, "I am calling you to accept this wisdom that I have to give to you." Listen, Dwight, I'm not going to consider any wisdom from you until you can spell the area of the world you're claiming to hail from, okay? I digress, but we are going to go into these insane ramblings called books in other parts of this series. There's just so much freaking crazy to dive into. Be patient, there will be plenty. Anyway, so back to the Supermax prison, where a man that was apparently grandmaster of just about anything that's ever existed is now in a tiny concrete cell, surrounded by a cast of horror show characters. Just feet away, his current roommates include a man who escaped Mexican prisons twice before being transferred to the highest security facility in the world, ADX. Joaquin Gomez, better known as El Chapo. Described as, quote, "the most ruthless, dangerous, and feared man on the planet" by the U.S. government. But we're just getting warmed up here. Johar Tsarnaev, Boston Marathon bomber, also there. Two of the men convicted of the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, Terry Nichols, co-conspirator with Timothy McVeigh, who helped kill 168 people in the Oklahoma City bombing. Richard McNair, now to be fair, he's only convicted of one murder, only one under his belt, which occurred during a botched robbery, which I know, murder's not great, but this is what likely got him locked up in ADX. It was the fact that he had escaped prison 3 times prior before landing there. In letters sent back and forth with a Canadian crime reporter who reached out to McNair in prison, McNair described his location as the, quote, "most secure section of the most secure prison in the world." but he expressed reservations about discussing specific details of his incarceration. He did say, though, quote, "Thank God for prisons. There are some very sick people in here. Animals. You would never want living near your family or the public in general. I don't know how corrections staff deal with it. They get spit on, shit on, abused. And I have seen them risk their own lives and save a prisoner many times." End quote. So between the infamous, the terrorists and drug lords, the mobsters and murderers, sits our friend Dwight York. Cult leader, R&B singer. Narcissist, sure, but he kind of seems like he's out of his league, right? No, he is right where he belongs. When you hear of this man's crimes, you'll thank your lucky stars that his 125-year sentence isn't even a third of the way through. Now, this shouldn't be surprising or worrisome, because I did stop myself at actually writing him in prison and requesting visitation, which probably wouldn't have been granted, number one, because, you know, or ever, because it would have been months down the road. But I actually had critical thinking to say to myself, Rachel, if you did speak to him, if you did interview him, what would you say? Like, hi, Dwight, first of all, fuck you. Anyway, thank you for speaking with me. I'd like to start off with a quick fire question. You know, break the ice before we dig deep, okay? Vanilla or chocolate ice cream? Are you more of a Carrie, Miranda, Samantha, or Charlotte? Who's the one person you'd want to have dinner with and ask them their story? And you can't say yourself here, Dwight. West Coast or East Coast? Never mind, don't answer that. I forgot where we were. No, I would not be able to fake it. But more importantly, I'm not trying to run into Timothy McVeigh's buddy or El Chapo. I'm all set on that. But I'm not all set enough to not drive there. What do you think, I was going to find out that the Supermax prison he's held at is an hour and a half from me in Colorado and not go? So, I did. By myself. Greg, I mean, I loosely told him I was going. I said I was going to write near there just to get the vibe. But I just drove past it. Whatever. I'm not in trouble. But driving by it initially, it looked like a nice complex of like cookie cutter duplexes. Part of them were even painted Tiffany green. I mean, that's glamour at its best, right? And then I went to it. So I booked a hotel because I was like, well, now that I'm already here, it's an hour and a half away. And now I'm inspired to write. So I might as well just stay. And I was going to stay in the town, but then I saw like six other prisons. And I was like, I think no. I kept going. And so I got to my hotel room, inspired to write. And I started to dig deeper. And I realized that what I saw from the road is not what the Supermax portion is, because it's underground. That is like the inmate light version in the front. And York is housed in the facility that can only be described as military grade, ominous, sterile, devoid of personality, and most notably, like I said, underground. If you see aerial photos of it, there's something about it that just kind of makes your skin crawl. So thank God I didn't try to jump a fence. I wouldn't have been able to see them anyways, but they might have been able to see me through their windows. Well, at least the guards would, and rightfully so, they should have tackled me to the ground, but I didn't do it. And I only bring up the subject of the prison he's held in to give you some comfort in knowing he cannot hurt, manipulate, abuse, or rob someone of their innocence ever again once you hear his crimes. So how does a young man born in Boston, Massachusetts, allegedly, but who knows, based on the multitude of new identities and past lives he peddled, but what seems to be the most cited birthplace and the most cited date is June 26, 1945. The man who had too many names was born as Dwight York in Boston, Massachusetts. But later, and let's get this out of the way now so you can understand the crazy, and so I don't have to keep changing names throughout the episode, unless it is to distinctly call his bullshit. Let's just go through the names. But for the rest of the episode, I'm just going to call him Dwight York. Okay? So he was known as, besides Dwight York, Dr. Malachi Z. York, Isa Muhammad, Isa Hadi Al-Mahdi, Isa Abd Allah Muhammad, Baba, Dr. York, Dr. Love, and then some like nicknames or terms of endearment by his followers were Doc or Pops. And then when he laid down his sweet misspelled teachings, he upped the ante and went by Master Teacher, the Reformer, the Lamb, and Chief Black Eagle. And one of his alien names was Avatara. But like I said, for the purposes of simplicity and for ribbing him a little bit because he's a total piece of shit, he's just going to go by Dwight the entire episode, or Dwight York. But it is kind of a nerdy name. No offense to the Dwights out there. Dwight claimed many things. Anything that was different than his likely basic childhood was in Boston. He was probably from a normal working class family. He went to normal public school and, well, was probably not related to an Egyptian prince. But Dwight wants you to know a few things about the people that shaped him. They were not just working class, normal Bostonians. No, they were unique, special, even royalty. And that he was also chosen. His royal blood came from the obviously likely, I'm not going to say likely, completely made up story that no one else in his family corroborates and also who don't talk to him. He claims that his mom traveled to Egypt when she was 19, met one of the royal princes of Sudan, and he gives a name for him which seems to be a real person, although the multiple names York gives are out of order for the one you find when you Google someone of a similar name. But that's not surprising because everything in his pamphlets are misspelled. Or I'm sorry, books. Sorry, Dwight. So listen, I'm going to call bullshit on 99.9% of this story. The 0.1% I can see that maybe seeped into York's head and he ran with it was like some family member mentioned some family function. Like, do you know where the descendants of blah, blah, blah? Like people do. Like some families brag about being 12 times removed from being related to Benjamin Franklin. Or once my mom wondered if we were related to a Cordy rock star because she shared the same maiden name. 80s hair band dude and royalty, not really the same thing, but, you know, people do this. Anywho, York claims his 19-year-old mom had relations with said prince and that she was completely unaware that the man she was falling for was from royalty. He was so humble and so was she. She's not a crown-chasing chassis. No, she only found out that he was dripping in Sudanese royalty at the moment, just at that moment, that he was summoned back home from his family. Well, now pregnant with this royal baby, she waited until she was 9 months along, allegedly, probably because she didn't want there to be any confusion that she was pregnant. And she tracked the royals down in Sudan. There were probably no guards at the palace, so she was easily able to waltz up and meet the fam, only to be turned away like a peasant. Bullshit. So, but not to be deterred, his mother apparently still gave her chosen son a royal name. But then back in the States, it was weird when the rest of the family would be named David, Dale, Deborah, and Dennis. Like, she couldn't have her chosen son have a jazzier name than the rest of her family, so she made him go by Dwight. Okay. Now, if this isn't making sense, it's because it shouldn't. It's because it's a fairy tale written by a child. Anywho, York also claimed he was born exactly 100 years after his great-grandfather, to the date, and his great-grandfather was the Mahdi. And this is a big deal in Muslim culture. The Mahdi was considered a warrior, the reformer, the renewer of faith. And wouldn't you have it? That person only pops up once every 100 years. So if you do the math, toss in some illegitimate child Sudanese royal genes, get a pat on the back and a wink from the great-grandfather. And according to Dwight's writings, there was a conversation where Great Jipa said to him, "You are the one who would possess the light." So if we get our bullshit cult leader calculator, crunch some data, it seems like Dwight York. Dwight York from Boston, Massachusetts, is the next chosen Mahdi. Unbelievable. How this wasn't a Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen movie back in the day is a shock to me. Missed opportunity, honestly. So how did Dwight York pull all this off? Well, he was certainly a world-class con and manipulator. But he also just happened to hit it at the right time, the right place, and most importantly, with the right connections. York's cult movement came about at a time when so many Black people were frustrated, beaten down, disillusioned, and scared. And no leader or religious figure really looked like them, besides a small handful of fringe groups like the Black Panthers. But at the time York started his cult, those ships had largely sailed, the members already chosen, leaving a hungry for change, disenfranchised, beaten down Black community searching. The area of Brooklyn where his movement began was called Bushwick, a working class neighborhood that is described so beautifully by Jamila, like I said, in her book, The Community. When she was just 4 years old, her dad had begun taking classes at the Bushwick compound, unbeknownst to her mom. And one day he came home and said they were now Muslim and she was to quit her job, give up her worldly possessions, pierce her nose, and along with Jamila, follow him into this new world. She had no choice but to oblige because to her, keeping her family together was the most important thing in the world. And if her husband wanted to join this movement, well, then she would join as well. Jamila describes the walk and the train ride to her new home, the community, as passing by a live-out-loud world. One she was used to. A stark contrast to what would initially be inside Dwight's cult. In a direct quote from her book, and I encourage you guys to go out and buy it because it is just breathtaking. So she's describing her and her mom walking to their new life in the community, and she writes, quote, "We walked past seemingly apathetic mothers who burned sage and sandalwood or who sprinkled Florida water drops the size of tears onto the backs of their departing sons to ward off the billy clubs and cuffs of bad cops or the gunshots that aimlessly traveled through their atmosphere. These moms shimmied to merengue or two-stepped to Motown, while plantains sizzled in a pan or collard greens boiled in a pot. Big sisters sat on sepia-colored stone steps, weaving rows of braids into smaller versions of themselves." End quote. But what they would enter was a world of suppressed women, sleeping on the floor, and not being allowed to be a family. York believed in separating the men and women, unless, of course, they were women visiting his quarters. He had free range, while his followers were controlled, monitored, and forced into a stark world of living without, in order to further the cause. That's it for this week. Thank you guys so much for listening. And in the next two parts on Dwight York, we will cover his ever-changing identity. I mean, his crimes are not funny, but his changing of identities and the pamphlets, I could spend a week just reading those and be like, this needs to be an SNL sketch. So just get ready. So we're going to go through his compounds, his ever-changing beliefs, and then sadly, his horrific crimes, and then eventually, how he ends up in a supermax prison. Again, thank you guys so much for listening. Love you. Bye.